Welcome to the recap of 2020 as we look at the year that was, and it's basically a year in two parts. Joining me to discuss this year that was, producers Josh Bittner and Peter Tubbs. That's alphabetical, guys. Sorry, neither one of you paid me to have top billing. But Peter, we are talking remotely. Josh, we're talking remotely. This is something I think I've looked at you guys more in the face on a screen than I have in person this entire year. Peter, have you looked at anybody on the screen more than, say, your coworkers on these Zoom calls?
No, and that's probably by a factor of 10, if not 100. Yeah. I've had more eye contact via a screen this year than probably my entire life cumulatively.
Josh, you were an editor prior to becoming a producer, so you were used to staring at that screen all the time. But
right.
You don't get used. Do your eyes hurt at the end of a day after looking at a screen all the time or having these meetings online?
I guess maybe it is a throwback to some of those days, except when I'm at home, I have a window by where I'm at and I can look outside. So when I was an editor, it was you didn't know what time of day it was, if it was snowing outside, sunny, whatever. You were in your own little world right there. So, yeah.
And now the commute for many of us is just as far as it takes us to get from bed to where the computer screen is. So I've holed up in the basement for the last, since I think July. Otherwise, I had been kind of a nomad roaming around the house. I finally settled on something and threw all the hand-me-downs together. Peter, we've seen you in the basement a lot of times. I think you also have rotated, but your life at home has gotten a little more wild as more people are trying to work in school from your home as well.
That's right. I have two boys at home right now, one middle school, one high school, doing virtual learning. At the moment, our eldest is home from college, so she's just trying to stay out of the way, kind of, both physically and bandwidth-wise. And our youngest, we are still physically taking her to a physical building because she's in a school that still has physical class in person. Well, we're kind of day-to-day, week-to-week, but we'll see how far that goes.
Josh, when you've done a recording remotely, have you had to tell the others in your house to get off the bandwidth? I need all the bandwidth I can get. I'm going to record something. Do you do that like I do?
It hasn't been really too bad because they split time in between my house and their mom's house. So it isn't that bad. But yeah, usually they're online if they're there. Even in the summertime, it was like, you guys, it's nice outside,
We'll go out there eventually.
But it hasn't been too bad that way, though, no.
Did either of you take a trip in 2020 prior to March for a story? I mean, that's ridiculously hard to think about. Josh, I think you did, right?
Well, the tail end of 2019, we went up to Northeast Iowa and then over to Galena, Illinois. And there was a couple over there that has a shop in Galena that was a CBD store, and they were applying to get the second round of legal marijuana dispensaries in the state. The first round of them started with places that had been medical places, and then the second wave was places like theirs that weren't necessarily like a medical marijuana place, but they had CBD and stuff like that. And then we talked to the sheriff in Dubuque County, Iowa, too, to talk to him about, problems of legal marijuana coming across the border, issues with that. What we were going to do was follow them throughout the year. So talk to them before 2020, then talk to them kind of halfway in the spring, see how things were going for them. And they were supposed to know by May if they got it or not, but everything got pushed back. So we had a lead story that we did early in January about it, but then we were never able to put the full feature together yet. So we're going to hope to pick up the pieces with that. But then the other thing that we did up there was part of our Move to Include series. And so the Gatto family lives in Dyersville outside of Dubuque. Alec is paralyzed and in a motorized wheelchair, but he shows cattle. It's a very inspirational story, and we were able to shoot some of that on the farm before things happened. And then we didn't talk to him for a long time, and we were like, oh my gosh, is everything okay? And it was just, they were just busy and just didn't have a chance to get back on the phone. So we eventually put that all together.
And that was one of our more popular stories online. And in fact, the two moved to includes. The other featured a farmer who had lost his legs. I think John Torpy did that one, right? Is that right, Josh? Yeah. And so yes. Those were two stories, and they're both on our YouTube channel. So I guess if anything's going to happen today, Peter, I'm going to just do a whole lot of selfish plugs. Selfish. I mean, they're just plugs. Join our YouTube channel or Facebook page, or you're listening to this podcast. Glad to have you. So, Peter, had you done any traveling in 2020 before March?
No trips early March. I'm just looking. Actually, I looked back and said, you know, the list of everything we did in 2019. My last out-of-state trip would have been in September when I went to southern Minnesota to the nursery that grows nothing but like prairie plants for, you know, restoration of areas. I did have a shoot in November about the propane shortage when nobody could get any propane, because between a high demand drying season and an early cold snap, the supply chain froze up a little bit, or just couldn't get it to everybody who needed it. And then I did do one field story in 2020 during COVID. It was in April, I believe. I went to the town of Gowrie because the community they fundraised and bought the grocery store that the owner was closing, and hired a manager and remodeled it and reopened it at the height of the COVID situation. And so it was kind of a two-pronged story of how do you do that and what's it like, you know, in the current time? Because like their meat case was only half full because they couldn't get everything that they wanted because the processors were in the throes of their having labor issues because their employees are getting sick. So those are my shoots. So yeah, it's been a remarkably odd year for us doing everything at home or in the office, or, you know, can you send a cell phone video, or, you know, interviews over Zoom, and, you know, and it's funny because I have, as soon as we get done with this, I have an interview for this week's show doing it over Zoom. So
sure. Well, and that's, I was going to bring that up, Peter. You're an old, you started as a photojournalist. Josh, you started, you've done a lot of work in production trucks commercially for sports events. So, I mean, you guys have both worked in the outside world and for a number of years, as have I. And I think of, Peter, how many times did you have to beg somebody, no, I got to have a camera, I got to send this camera, you got to stand out and do the interview? Like, I don't have that time. Now you just say, can you open up your computer and give me 5 minutes? I'll record it. Hell, you can do it on your phone. I can record it from whatever room you're in. Countless. Now, I know Josh scoffs at the quality, and he's right. The quality is a little different, and I know you want it to look as good as we can, but frankly, and I've said it in my head, it has, and I've said it to others, this has allowed us to get across the country on a much cheaper dime than it would be spending. And we've gotten into more corners, but we've sacrificed a little bit on the quality. But Josh, do you think that we've done a good job of trying to get to all these different places that would be, man, that'd be a 3-day haul to go get a producer or get a camera and go?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I assume that probably what will happen with this technology is it will just improve. People will probably get more savvy about it. And so in some ways, it's probably a new norm for us. We'll still want to go out and do as high quality as we possibly can. But yeah, it's just shown that we can get to some of those places, like you said. So I imagine it would just keep improving for a lot of people in a lot of industries, because it's cheaper for a lot of people. You know, it's just, you take the travel away, and that can be inconvenient sometimes, but I like traveling too. So, you know, I don't know. It'll be a new world. You know, what's interesting is going back to the travel before everything happened, I went on a vacation before, March, at the end of January and early February. My dad and I went to Okinawa, because my brother, he just retired from the Navy, but he was stationed over there, and it was kind of his last chance for anyone if they wanted to. He kind of just threw it out there. Why don't you come visit me over here? You know, and he was half joking. And my dad and I got to talking about it. We're like, you know, when else would we ever have the excuse to go there? So let's just go, you know? And we went and we were sort of surprised that we could still go. We kept kind of waiting for someone to tell us, you know, you can't go to that part of the world, cause everything was kind of raging in China then. The island was fine. We did wear masks. Just, I kind of thought, let's be proactive and do this. And they had their first case while we were there. There was a Chinese cruise line that came into port there, and supposedly a bus driver, local bus driver, caught it from those tourists. So, it was just starting to brew. And not too long after that, there was another cruise ship that had to be quarantined around that area. So we were just kind of thankful that we kind of got out of there just in time. So
there's always something that you have to do when it comes to travel and adjust in a hurry. And Peter, you have a similar story, I think, of global travel and how things changed for you guys. I mean, I don't need to tell all the personal details, but you went out of country and noticed a different approach. That was back in September, July. When was that?
It was in September. We were adopting a child from Colombia, and we were supposed to go in March. And like literally we're going to leave, I think it was like on the 16th of March. And I came into work. It was a Friday. Well, our bags were literally packed. And then we were talking about, you know, the plans for me being away. And by lunchtime, we had to scrub the trip because word was coming that, well, you might get into the country, but we don't know if you'll leave. And so we said, well, got to delay this. So we delayed it 25 weeks. And I was gone most of September. And Colombia had, at least Bogota that we saw, we didn't see a single person without a mask. And when you came into a building, there was a temperature check and a brief mist down with disinfectant. And, you know, every delivery person that brought you your ordered dinner, it would get sprayed down before you brought it into the hotel. They were extremely cautious, trying to limit the spread as best they could. And then by the time we came back to the U.S. a month later, even the level of sanitation on the aircraft was much more casual. They were, you know, it was no longer everyone in full PPE. It was just like, well, I got a mask and maybe I have gloves. And you know, it was funny watching.
Good luck after transition. That.
Yeah. You're on your own. Yeah.
One of the things, you know, Josh, you bring up you know, China and Japan, and we think of globally how things have changed. I'm going to ask that in a minute. Peter, I need to follow back up on Colombia. I assume you do this all the time with everything else. What have been the infection rates and the spread rates in Colombia compared to other countries when it comes to COVID?
It was tracking very similar to the U.S. for most of the summer. And they had enough of a lull starting around in July that they thought, okay, we can start at least opening up international travel in. And so you had lots of native Colombians who hadn't been able to return to Colombia for all the various reasons. And then on my way out, like literally at the airport, I talked to two Americans who had been stranded in Colombia since mid-March because they couldn't get a flight back. And just listening to their experiences was eye-opening.
Can you believe, Josh, in the beginning of January of 2020, we were talking about the USMCA, the United States-Mexico-Canada agreement, and how it had finally passed the Senate, and then phase one was signed. There was optimism about renewable fuels. I mean, for agriculture and for the world, there was a whole lot happening in just the first 2 weeks of this year.
Yeah, there was. And it seems like 3 years ago now, doesn't it? You know, it's kind of funny how things will come back like in a Facebook feed and say, hey, look at this. This was a year ago. That was a year ago. We went to a wedding down in Phoenix and then took a little family trip up to the Grand Canyon and stuff like that. And you're like, that was only a year ago. That was like a few weeks before Thanksgiving. Oh my gosh. You know, some of the stuff that we did work on though, me personally, this year, when we were all kind of quarantined, I was, I guess, lucky to be one of the first ones to be quarantined because I had to go to a funeral in Nebraska. And then on my way back, there was a mandate. All state employees who had traveled out of the state over the weekend had to quarantine for 2 weeks. So Dave brought me a laptop right away. And while it's not a fantastic whiz-bang laptop, it sounds like it was one of the better ones. And some of the folks were trying to scrape some other ones up later. So it's been nice to be able to work remotely like that and mix what's in our library that's high quality with Zoom stuff that we go pick up. And, you know, we can, through the magic of the internet, we can get all that together onto the same computer and put something together pretty well. And we weren't shooting anything there for a while in March and part of April. And so as I'm sitting home watching the nightly news, I'm seeing how they're conducting these field interviews with everyone, videographer, reporter, interviewee, all socially distanced apart, you know, with a C-stand and a boom mic so that everyone can be spread out. And I talked to Dave about it and I said, why don't we start going out in the field and kind of pushed for that? And I don't know who went out first, me or Peter or whoever, but we shot a story about the packing plants and we went up to Iowa State and talked to a professor up there. And then we went down to a sale barn in Knoxville, auction area, and we talked to them as well about how things were affecting them. So that was the first thing that we got out and did again. And it felt great to get out there. It was weird, you know, bumping elbows with everyone. And someone else brought this up to me, by the way, if we're supposed to cough into our elbow, then why do we bump elbows with people? I guess it's the other side of it, but you know, that's, I hadn't thought about that until they said something about that. It was like, huh? Okay. The other
today
thing
on
that we
Dr.
did was,
Josh.
Yeah,
he'll investigate the coughing into the elbow germ share.
That'll be a side project for Market to Market, content vertical. The other thing that we did was follow a first-time hemp farmer, since this was the first year that Iowa was allowed to have hemp farming. We followed a farmer in Norwalk at the beginning of the season as he planted, and we did a feature out of that with the head of the Iowa Hemp Association was another interview over Zoom. And then we spoke with Robin Prusner at Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship in-person interview. And so we did that. And then we, through the second half of the season, we shot some of the harvest. And then we worked with a videographer in Michigan, because though Iowa approved a processing law, none of the infrastructure is in place just yet for people who did their first season. So he knew someone who would process it in Michigan, so he drove it up there. But what's interesting is, you know, just talking to him about some of the challenges that he had this year. It was, you know, if people drop out, where are you going to get that replacement capital? But one big unforeseen thing for him, and for all of us, was the derecho. So, and the interesting thing about that is you see all these cornfields just destroyed by it, you know, and we have that great video of someone harvesting it and it's just kicking up all this dirt. And those hemp plants, he shared a video with me that I'll put into the harvest feature when it gets finished. He shared a video of me of they were out there when it happened. So they're taking shelter, but he's taping the field and those hemp plants are getting knocked over. And he just thinks, you know, he's sick to his stomach, like these things are going to be destroyed. So we go through the aftermath of everything. And unlike the corn, those hemp plants just popped right back up like nothing happened. So an interesting thing about them.
Yeah. And I've seen that video that you're talking about. And now, granted, it's a different plant. The spacing's different, but it was incredible to see population is different. So I guess, Peter, I'll ask, what's going to have a bigger, when we look back in 5 years, if we take COVID out of the mix, which we can't in discussing the year, what's going to be the biggest, what was the biggest story in rural America? Because, well, we still have the long-lasting impact of the derecho that came through in August. Will it be the trade deals that were made, the phase one? And Will it be something else as we look down the road?
The thing I hope sticks, and I don't know if it will be more and more consumers buying directly from their farmer and kind of going around the supply chain, which when it is in operational, our food supply chain in the United States is amazing. But because it is so efficient, it is also very brittle. There's no slack in the system. You know, if 20% of the employees at a meat plant can't come to work, they can't just call up another 20% and bring them in. It just doesn't happen that way. So I know that, you know, in that spring period, millions of small businesses in and out of food didn't have a way to do e-commerce and had to sort of on the fly at either get a website that could do e-commerce if they didn't have a website to begin with. Maybe they only had a Facebook presence. Or if they had a website, oh, how do we bolt on e-commerce? You know, I know numerous restaurants here in Des Moines that didn't have that ability. You know, up until March, if you wanted to buy something from them, it had to happen face-to-face. Or maybe they could take a credit card over the phone. And now almost all of them are paired with multiple delivery services, so you can just do it on an app on your phone, or you can go straight to their website and say, here's my dinner order, and I'm going to be there at 6, and then you show up, and there it is at 6, or no, I want this delivery company to bring it. I know the delivered stuff, more stuff to your home, that's going to become, if people weren't doing it before March, they're certainly doing it now, and they're probably going to keep doing it as we move forward. So if you own a delivery company, you're going to have a lifetime of work, because I don't see that going away. And like grocery delivery, if you're near a store that will deliver groceries, if whatever percent was doing it a year ago, it has to be 2 or 3 or 4 times more now. And I bet once people get used to that convenience, it's worth the $5 or $10 to not go to the store and do that shopping.
There's a wedge, and there's two areas. You are either Amazon, which you're the super large and got larger because you have such a share, or you were the super small that got the Tubbs family comes in at 6, the Bittner family comes in at 6:10, the Jaeger family comes in at 6:20. They figured out how to do scheduling, to do everything that's so personal and so local, or it's the Josh, it's the locker that now it takes my side of beef that I'm buying from in Cambridge, Iowa, or wherever it is. The locker situation has changed too. I know you haven't covered that as much, but I mean, that local food angle is huge and is going to be huge going forward.
Yeah, I guess I didn't cover the locker as much this time around. I think that was Colleen that did a story about that. The last time that we were in a locker, it was a food insecurity story, actually, which rings true with the end of this year. But that was the hush story about the deer donation and cutting down on deer population.
Yep, and I've seen that as well. That has expanded as well. And then it expanded like around your story, and now there's been a decline because some people can't afford to give that meat up, because they need it for themselves and aren't as charitable as they once were.
Something else, isn't it? Yeah. You know, I guess what's the solution to that? Do you open it up to let them shoot more deer so that they can, you know, that might be one thing. But the hunter that we talked to at the time back then said that it was a good deal, the amount that they could get and the amount that they could give away, because if you shot any more and kept it, it just ended up sitting around in your freezer forever. And eventually you just threw it out. So something like this maybe would be better if they can expand that a little bit. We did have two stories that we were going to shoot outside of state that the trip got completely canceled as well. And so hopefully we can pick that back up sometime in 2021 or maybe 2022. But one of the interesting things that we were shooting was, it was pollinators in the desert. So this trip was to Arizona and Southern California, and it was desert pollinators for desert crops. Well, bats are a big pollinator in that area. And then it just so happened that coronavirus happened and they pinned it on a bat and everything. So it was like, we were going to talk to these bat experts. It was going to be pretty interesting, actually. So we couldn't go on that trip. I mean, it was, you know how it was in the spring where it was like, maybe a few more weeks of this and then we'll get back to normal. So it was hanging out there. It was the beginning of May. We were supposed to go on this trip. So it was in April. We're going, maybe you can, we don't know yet. And eventually it did get canceled. So I reached out to those people again, and I wanted to ask them some questions about bats in general to see if we could put together something about coronavirus. You know?
Oh, I bet they love that.
They did not respond.
Yeah, I bet.
They were not interested in talking about that, unfortunately. But we'll see. I don't know if that's going to shade their future, you know, availability or how much they want to talk about this other thing, if they think that they're going to get roped into a conversation about this, or I don't know. So,
all right, we've just got a couple of minutes left. I have to speed things up. I feel like I'm going to squeeze in livestock here at the end, Peter. Okay. What do you think has been the biggest COVID, other than what you've talked about already, what was the biggest COVID story in agriculture this year?
It was when the meat packing system froze. And plants had to take a week or two off and not process anything because they didn't have the help. And they had to let everyone give them time to quarantine and get better and clean the plant. And then what do you do with this huge backlog of cattle and hogs and every other meat product? And that's probably still hiccups. The weights going to plants are still heavier than average because every critter has kind of had to get to the back of the line, so to speak. So how long does it take to get those weights, average weights, back to normal? How many producers rolled out these selling to consumers? Do consumers, after they've purchased a quarter of a steer and they have it in the freezer, do they do that again? Do they think, oh, yeah, that was nice, I want to keep doing that? And are there enough consumers doing that sort of thing to, you know, at least for a few producers, change how they sell 10% or 20% of their herd?
All right, Josh, 30 seconds. Do you have a different take on that, or is the meat packing the biggest impact in rural America?
Yeah, I would definitely say that is the biggest impact. We both covered that story. It went on for months and months, and it was just in the headlines this week. They fired the
seven managers,
like seven different managers that were making bets on. Yikes.
Yep.
Yeah, that's not good PR.
That's not.
But, no, not at all.
All right. Well, in the Zoom world, when you use a free account, you only have a few minutes. And I told these guys I'd keep it short. We're up against the clock, and I also wanted to help the average and lower it. Josh Bittner, I appreciate your time. And Peter Tubbs, thank you so much.
See you next year.
See you next year. That'll do it for this installment of the MTOM podcast. I'm Paul Yeager. My thanks to Josh and Peter for the discussion. When we look ahead next week, we're going to look ahead to 2021. What stories will carry over? We know COVID will. Will there be anything else? Let's see. That'll be Dave Miller and John Torpy will join me for that. And if you haven't listened to some of the past episodes, recently we talked to the Cardells who took the turkeys to Washington, D.C., the honor of getting it pardoned. Also had a conversation with a farmer in Pennsylvania and the Griggs family from Tennessee. I'm Paul Yeager. Thank you so very much for listening.